From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nicole Grisco with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, March 17th, 2026.
This Day in Maine is made possible in part by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 26 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Backers of a citizen initiative aimed at banning transgender students in girls' school sports in Maine have gathered enough signatures to put the issue on the ballot. Secretary of State Shanna Bellows says her staff certified more than 70,000 signatures, more than enough to qualify the petition. Leyland Strife of Brunswick, the principal organizer for the petition effort, says the referendum is not a party line issue.
We felt like a citizens' initiative and a ballot referendum was the right way to go about this, because what's more democratic than every single Mainer gets to show up, gets to have their voice heard, and a simple majority vote is the thing that will determine what we as an entire state get to do going forward.
The initiative now goes to the Maine legislature, which can enact the bill as written or send it to voters on November 3rd. Members of a coalition of opponents say they intend to launch a statewide campaign against the referendum. Leaders of the Wabanaki Nations are endorsing the creation of a new commission to examine limitations on how federal laws apply to tribes in Maine. Kevin Miller reports.
Tribal leaders have long argued that the 1980 Maine Indian Claims Settlement Act has harmed their communities by preventing them from automatically benefiting from federal laws that apply to other tribes nationwide. The administration of Governor Janet Mills has opposed lifting that preemption clause altogether, but has supported a more piecemeal approach. But on Tuesday, the governor's office and tribal leaders agreed to a compromise in which a task force would dive into the issue and make recommendations to the legislature. Penobscot Nation Chief Kirk Francis told a legislative committee he hopes that will lead to more substantive changes during the next legislative session.
The tribes of Maine continue to be second-class citizens, even in our own space. So we really are appreciative of this continued conversation.
The Judiciary Committee voted unanimously to endorse the proposal, which now goes to the full legislature for consideration. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
The Woodland Pulp Mill in Baileyville is reporting a leak of 4,000 gallons of hydrogen peroxide earlier this month, which officials say will further stall its reopening after a month-long shutdown. Michael Livingston reports.
According to a press release from the mill's spokesperson, the hydrogen peroxide flowed into the mill's sewer system from an open drain valve on March 7th. The compound is used in the Kraft Mill's bleaching process and is considered a hazardous substance. The cause of the open drain valve is still being investigated. According to the release, the leak caused no injuries or property damage and is not expected to have any impact on the St. Croix River. The incident occurred only a few months after a toxic gas exposure incident in January, which caused the deaths of two workers. Mill officials say the leak could delay the return to full production, but did not include a timeline to reopen. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Michael Livingston.
The Maine Senate has advanced a bill aimed at legalizing so-called balcony solar panels. As Molly Enking reports, some lawmakers hope the small plug-in panels can help Mainers offset high electricity bills.
The Maine House could vote as early as this week on a bill that would allow consumers to set up smaller plug-in solar devices without connecting them to the power grid. The measure exempts these smaller panels from interconnection agreements with local utility companies that are required of larger residential solar arrays. Small enough to hang off a balcony or be placed in a yard or driveway, plug-in solar panels are more commonly used in Europe. This past year, interest in the technology has taken off in the U.S., and similar legislation has been passed or introduced in California, New York, Utah, Vermont, and elsewhere. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly Enking.
Rapidly warming winters are testing the ability of Maine ski areas to keep their slopes covered with the amount of snow customers expect. Now some resorts are investing heavily in new technology that they say improves snowmaking and minimizes consumption of water, energy, and fuel. Peter McGuire takes us to Sunday River in Newry, where the trails are being groomed with machines that use high-tech sensors to measure snow depth in real time.
The first time I saw a snowcat, I knew that I wanted to run a snowcat.
Greg Hunton pilots his 14-ton snow grooming machine up a steep trail at Sunday River's Barker Mountain. The front blade collects loose snow from a full day of skiing and pushes it out a back tiller in a glistening layer patterned like corduroy.
So I need to know the depth of everything and where to put the snow, where to cover the rocks and then all the dirt, basically.
Hunton's been grooming this mountain for 25 years, but this season he's got a new tool called LIDAR to help out. The system shoots invisible laser beams to measure the snow depth around his cat in real time. It shows up on a digital map next to his joystick.
It's like kind of like the depth finder on a boat, really, is what I would liken it to. It just helps because I just know what's under the snow, basically.
While Hunton's using the system to avoid rocks, the resort is using it to fine-tune distribution of snow all over the mountain.
Not only does it allow us to make the correct amount of snow on every run, but from a grooming standpoint, it helps me manage the snow.
Down in Sunday River's operations hub, grooming manager Nathan Brown, or Brownie, points to a screen displaying a map of the resort's trails. They're lit up in vivid colors with data from the cat. Blue shows deep snow, light green and red are thinner areas.
Our goal is to spread the stuff out, take the blue, move it to the red or the lighter greens, and try to keep an even snow surface.
Last summer, Sunday River used drones and aircraft to digitally map its topography down to the inch. Brownie says when cats do their scans, it shows the difference between the trail surface and base map, thereby the depth of the snow. But Brownie says where the system will really shine is snowmaking. Instead of guessing which trails need coverage, the digital map shows precisely where and when to target with snow guns, saving water and energy in the process.
Maybe you don't have to make snow on the whole run. You know, the snowmaker can look at that and go down and see the areas that still need snow. Maybe instead of the whole run, maybe you turn on four or five guns where you actually need the snow.
Sunday River has already dumped millions of dollars into high-efficiency snowmaking as natural snow becomes less predictable. Mike Unruh from Boyne Resorts, Sunday River's parent corporation, says it is rolling out similar technologies across its 10 ski mountains, including systems to track fuel use, remotely operate snow guns, and find other efficiencies.
Which is both adding to sustainability, and it's helping us maintain our costs so that we, you know, contrary to popular belief, can keep our prices as low as we possibly can.
This particular innovation is a really good example of ski areas trying really hard to adapt to changing winters.
Alex Contasta is a professor at the University of New Hampshire who studies changing winters in New England. She says while ski resorts' quest for efficiencies is laudable, it has its limits.
Because at a certain point, if the winters are too warm, snowmaking isn't going to be feasible.
Contasta says New England has already lost about 2 weeks of temperatures cold enough to make snow. And she says that trend is likely to continue, even if the world is able to cut back climate warming emissions.
But we can try to advocate for policy that puts us more into a low emissions scenario where we lose some winter, but we're also able to keep some.
We're going to go to Spruce and take a few loops.
Until then, Sunday River and other ski resorts are betting that with enough money and the right kind of equipment, they can keep skiers on the slopes as Maine's long winters become a thing of the past. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, adulting. I'm Nicole Ugrisco. Thanks for listening.